If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it.
Rachel, thanks so much for coming in. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a great day, and I'm so excited that you could be here and I can learn more about your incredible journey and also just, I think, hearing about your perspective on where we're at as a country and as an ecosystem for innovation and where we need to go as well. So excited to have all that happen in our conversation. But why don't we start off with, you know, for anyone that's not familiar with your work and what you're doing, can you give me like an elevator pitch for yourself and the work that you do?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Rachel Zimmer. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Symbol Ventures. What we do is we're a venture builder. So we are focused on building the next generation of great Canadian companies. We do everything from ideation to validation of a concept and then partner with a killer founder CEO to co-create a venture and scale it. We've been at it for a couple of years now, and we're really proud to have a really strong portfolio that's all going super well of different companies, and very fortunate to be backed by some killer leaders across the country, folks like TD Innovation Partner, Sun Life, Sobeys, and then a long list of founder operators like Michael Katchen, founders of Shopify, Felix Health, Wave Accounting, and then a long list of others. So, you know, the horsepower and focus is all around building the next generation of great Canadian companies with killer founders and incredible investors to do so.
And it seems like, yeah, you've assembled just like this Avengers team of like Canadian innovators to really build up the next generation of them.
Yeah, that's the idea. I think, you know, founders have different paths if they want to choose to build. You can bootstrap. It's a hard path. It's a lonely path, but it's a proven path. Another path is raising venture, and we're, you know, somewhere in the middle where, you know, capital efficiency, being really thoughtful about how you build in a scrappy way, but yet having some horsepower and amazing distribution across our investors is, you know, core to our DNA.
Yeah. So, let's start off with, what do you think is a unpopular opinion about the ecosystem and the industry that you operate in and live in?
An unpopular opinion, I would say, is there's a lot of noise generally, geopolitics, our neighbors in the South, stuff going on broadly across different sectors, and look over here, let's focus on XYZ sector. And as a founder, you know, I think it's all noise, and it's good to like see the headline, sure, SkimX, but at the end of the day, put your head down and build. Right. And I think that can be a popular opinion, because I think there's a lot of inertia around some of the noise and, you know, clickbait headlines like XYZ folks are going south of the border, or, you know, we've got some issues broadly, and it's like, okay, cool, but what are we doing about it? Pick up a shovel, let's go build, and let's stop talking about that and actually do something about it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of noise out there these days. Especially.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, just bring the focus back and just get to work. A lot of your thesis as an entrepreneur and as, you know, the founder and CEO of your company focuses on Canada's innovation ecosystem. What would you say, or I would say, like, if we could distill, like, what, first of all, does Canada have an innovation problem? Yeah. And what do you think is the underlying foundation for that?
So we do have a huge innovation problem. I think facts are facts. Like if you look objectively at the number of founders that we have versus 20 years ago versus, you know, there was a big BDC study that was done and mm-hmm. we've had a massive decline in entrepreneurship. So that is fact that we need to do something. We need to be putting more capital, more support, and we need more founders, you know, stepping up to go out to build. So I think that's very true. I think on the flip side of that, what's also very true is when you look at global leaders in talent, one that I always like to come back to is this economist named Tyler Cowen, mm-hmm. and he studies talent clusters around the world. And he identified in 2025 that Ontario, specifically the Southern Belt in Ontario, is one of the top three talent clusters in the world. It's pretty remarkable, right? So when you think of our unfair advantage and the ability for us to punch above our weight as a country, both by population and GDP and so on, we are, and specifically in Ontario, we have like one of the hottest areas of talent. And so I think our job as an ecosystem is to stoke the fire, support, and do everything we can to kind of drive the flywheel in a positive direction.
That is really interesting. And also, so in reference to that, is it the cultivation of talent or the retention of talent or a little bit of both?
If I think about the most ambitious founders that I've had the pleasure of getting to know through my career, I think what they want to see is access to capital and access to like a crazy unfair advantage to give them support to catapult what they're doing, mm-hmm. Learning from the best. Historically, I'm a founder, so I scaled and sold a business, and back in 2014, the ecosystem was really nascent. There weren't a lot of leaders to learn from. There were, but it was not what it is in 2026. Mm-hmm. And so what my co-founder and I did is we went down to the Valley. We'd stay in hacker houses, like really nerdy, get experience points for doing dishes kind of hacker houses for periods. And we learned from the best. So we were ambitious, had that crazy hunger, and we basically said, where do we have to go to, you know, be students of startup culture? We went down to the Valley. Now, we didn't move. We would use our vacation days and go down and spend time there. And once we decided to leave our corporate jobs to build our company, we spent a lot of time in the Valley, but we always came back home. Mm-hmm. And the idea was, how do you learn from the very best? And I think what's so exciting about Canada now is we have some really remarkable leaders. We now have an ecosystem that's produced many unicorns. Mm-hmm, and what's mm-hmm. so cool, and one of the things I'm really proud of with Simple Ventures, is we have, you know, a really great leader like Michael Katchen, who's built a $10 billion business, and he's investing back into the ecosystem. And so that flywheel is happening, and he's investing both capital and time, and there's many other leaders doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think we have that positive flywheel happening in our favor, and we just need more of it to continue to kind of cultivate, nurture, and retain talent.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about innovation, that word innovation, I feel like it kind of gets used constantly, but it does feel like one of those words that is like a bit of a catch-all, a bit vague. So when you use the word, how do you define innovation? Like, what does it mean to you?
I'll share what it means to me in my world, but yeah. I think broadly it's a massive umbrella of a term. I think about innovation in kind of two key ways. One is in creating value broadly, job creation, revenue generation, and just generally capturing value in a way that hadn't been captured before. So that could be serving an unmet need for a customer. That could be doing something in a commercial or enterprising way that can, capture value is the best way to say it. Mm-hmm. I think the other way to think about it is IP, right? Intellectual property. And thinking through what are things that are, you know, we're through research and development, you're cracking something that hasn't been done before, and then you can use that intellectual property to, you know, build a business or solve problems and so on. But I think both are true. And maybe to use language that would be typical investor language, often what investors assess is market risk mm-hmm. versus tech risk. Mm. And market risk is more on that. Are you actually able to create that value? That first example I shared. And then tech risk is, you know, can you actually feasibly build something and, you know, create IP in kind of that path of doing so?
Yeah. And do you think in terms of like your world of how you define innovation within the lens of like what you do and everything, do you think that that definition has changed or evolved, you know, over the years? And if so, like in what ways?
Yeah. I mean, when I just think about Simple Ventures, when we started building companies in the Simple Ventures umbrella, it was like right around ChatGPT launching. And when you think about fast forwarding to today with 2026, I think enduring innovation, durability in creating value in IP looks very different than it did 6 months ago, than it did 12 months ago, than it did 24 months ago.
Sure.
And so I think some of the things around, you know, the data moat, like what data do you have that is differentiated, partnerships or network moats, amongst others, right? It's like, what are the things that will give a, it will give innovation durability to actually make a difference and create value or IP?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that, you know, innovation is such an interesting world to explore, especially through the lens of a Canadian economy too. How do you decide, you know, or what do you think defines kind of, or kind of are the tenets of what makes an idea and innovation worth pursuing, essentially?
Something we look at in at Simple Ventures is traction. So we really want to see willingness to pay, customers saying, hey, this is a big problem, and I'm willing to put my credit card down or engage to solve that problem. And unless you see that signal, it's hard to say that you're actually meaningfully solving a problem and unlocking innovation. So I think that's one thought, but that's a very B2B and business-to-business or business-to-consumer way of thinking, more in like that market risk analogy that I shared. When it comes to intellectual property, that's a little bit different, right? Because how you might R&D something, you know, and tinker for 5 years, 10 years until you actually unlock something. It could be a pharmaceutical drug. It could be a, you know, storing, you know, battery technology is coming such a long way. And so, you know, elongating how long you can store power. So, right. So I think how you might think about that in different ways, whether it's, you know, traction with customers and value creation or more on IP development is a bit different.
Yeah. And if we kind of zoom out to more of a macro lens and look at Canada and its approach and embracing of innovation, do you think, you know, us as a country, we've been too focused on perhaps a specific definition of innovation, or maybe a narrower definition of innovation, and chasing perhaps certain sectors or outcomes versus other things that we should have been focusing on?
Yeah, I think that there's some really great case studies around the world where other countries have put some really smart incentives in place to kickstart the innovation economy. And I think specifically when government has gotten involved, it's really hard to pick the sector or double down on specific areas where, you know, if I think about Singapore as a great case study, there was a lot of macro incentives that were provided to investors and in favor of founders. And if you get into the details of that, it actually drove a lot of really great innovation and homegrown companies staying in Singapore and expanding it at a faster rate than in other countries.
Sure,
and so, you know, I think there's a lot of work we could do to accelerate that by taking those learnings. On the positive, I'll say there's some fantastic groups that are putting some really good work into doing that thinking and partnering with government to try and drive it. Build Canada is one great organization led by Lucy. Another one is NACO, the angel group across Canada. And so I think there's good work happening, but we don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's other good things happening. Other folks have figured it out. Let's take those learnings and bring it to Canada.
Yeah, exactly. And see what's working out there.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, you've had throughout your career like a really like a front row seat to entrepreneurship, one being someone that has built up a company and been able to, you know, cultivate that and see the success of it. So from building your own company to working inside Venture Studios, what do you think is a moment that really fundamentally changed how you think about building companies, either from just your experience building one yourself and then also seeing other people doing the same thing?
It's hard.
You're building, like the third person that has said that today.
A company today. It's freaking hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a phrase that a mentor shared with me circa over 10 years ago that really stuck, which is revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash flow is reality. And it's one of those things where if you zoom out and look at many small businesses and medium-sized businesses across the country, you know, on the stat is a third of businesses struggle to make payroll at least once in a calendar year because of cash flow. Mm-hmm. And revenue might be healthy, profit might be healthy, but at the end of the day, they're not collecting. And, you know, that's something that's really stuck with me. Building a business is hard. You need to be, you know, there's so many stakeholders, whether it's your customers or your employees or your team or your family at home, like all the different folks in your orbit. You know, it's a hard thing to do. I will share on that cash flow soundbite. We actually have built a business in partnership with a founder around that insight because we see how big of a problem it is for Canadians. The company we created is called Harvest.
Okay.
And we basically leverage agentic AI to help small businesses collect cash respectfully and thoughtfully so they can invest that money back into their business or make payroll.
Yeah. I mean, cash is king, right? And also just being able to have that ongoing cycle where, you could have all the invoices out there, but if it takes like 120 days to collect and you still gotta pay, like it is a big reality that I think is not unique to small or large businesses, right?
It's just, it's, you know, the money flowing is like oxygen in a business, and it's not just selling. You need to actually collect.
Yeah. You know, before you embarked on the journey that is Simple Ventures, what, from your perspective, frustrated you the most about the way companies were being built or funded and supported in the Canadian ecosystem?
So I've worn a few different hats in the ecosystem. I revenue funded a business. I've been a typical like venture capital investor. I've been an entrepreneur in residence at a large accelerator. So I've kind of seen different vantage points. And I think one of the things that really frustrated me, and this isn't unique to Canada, but it's more unique to how you build a business. There aren't a lot of options for funding outside of venture capital. And venture capital is a great path for many founders and many company types. It's also not a great fit. So for example, or to like double click on this, venture looks for $10 billion exits. They'll make 20 bets and assume one will return the fund. And, you know, some are going to go to zero, or most will go to zero. And I think one of the things that really I struggled with as a VC is someone might come with a great business and an awesome opportunity. And it's so, there's traction, there's IP, there's clear that the thing needs to be solved. But like in a best case scenario, it'll exit for $100 million and, or, you know, create $100 million in value. And unfortunately for most venture, that's a failure, right? And so I think one of the things that frustrated me was just kind of this tricky landscape for building great businesses that are in that, call it $50 to $500 million range that, you know, often is not getting, it's getting passed on because, you know, market size is being deemed too small. So that's something that I really struggled with and that I think I'm proud that we're solving with Simple Ventures, really kind of expanding how we think about funding opportunities just with like pragmatic PE-like discipline and how we approach building.
Yeah, yeah. And so speaking of Simple Ventures, you know, there's a story about a coffee meeting that turned into something much bigger. What clicked in that initial conversation you had with your co-founder, and why did it feel like it was more than, it could be something more than just like an idea?
So Michael Katchen, founder of Wealthsimple, is my partner in building Simple Ventures. And, you know, he had been thinking about this for quite a while before we chatted. And so when we connected, you know, I think there were a few things that we really hit it off on. One is this idea of just building good, durable businesses that are capital efficient with good unit economics. And yes, you want to see growth, but if you think about traditional venture, it's, you know, you're looking for hockey stick growth, which can sometimes come at the cost of like good, prudent, capital efficient, you know, approach to building. So I think that was one, just like the broad, broad approach to company building. I think the second is, you know, it's really hard to be a founder. And there's not a lot of options if you can't afford to quit your job and eat ramen for a while. There's not a lot of good options to do so. And so one of the things we got really excited about was how do we make entrepreneurship way more accessible? so that more folks actually can, you know, walk up to the plate and take a swing.
Eliminating those barriers.
The barriers, everything from, you know, a salary out the gate to, you know, support or bumpers, if you will. So as you're going, you've got folks in your, you know, in the boxing ring with you that are, you know, massaging the shoulders and making sure that you're, you know, you've got it. And so I think...
it can be a lonely experience as well.
It's a lonely experience. It's a hard... First time founders, it's a freaking hard experience. I think some of the good things of you need to have healthy naivety. Otherwise, you know, a lot of folks would, I probably wouldn't have signed up to do it both the first time and the second time. You need that.
Right.
You need that healthy naivety. But then when you're in those low moments, you need that 911 and 411 to help you get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you've worked so closely with a lot of founders at very early stages. What do you think is something about entrepreneurship that most people misunderstand or don't understand until they're in the throes of it, other than that it's hard and lonely? Like, what do you think surprises a lot of people or is a misconception about the path of entrepreneurship?
If we double click on why building is so hard, I think there's maybe we can deconstruct that. One thing that's very hard about it is you're often with a small team. Early days, everything, you know, sits on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, in a much larger company, you know, if you're away for a little bit, the rest of the team can shoulder the brunt of it. But if you're on a team of three, if you don't show up for a day, a week, like no one's pulling the thing. And so I think this idea that, you know, there's just a very small team, you're resource strapped by definition as a startup. And so I think the reality, the romanticization of creating something from nothing, you know, building a brand, solving folks' problems versus the reality of day to day, like let's say you might have a ton of customers to respond to. Maybe you have launched a feature that really, you know, was not a good thing and people were pretty upset with you and you need to deal with that. Maybe you have an HR issue and you need to have a hard conversation. You know, when I first started leading people, that my manager at the time was like, congratulations, you're now the topic of someone's dinner table conversation because it's hard, right? People management and kind of driving the ship. So I think maybe if I were to summarize the misconception, it's that idea of, you know, Instagram versus reality, the idea versus reality, or just, you know, it can be quite different when you get into the day to day.
Yeah. Just cause I remember this era, like when we, started our company, and it was a different name at the time, but we shifted a larger focus from kind of Bay Street business to news to really around the culture of entrepreneurship and work. And that was around the time when I feel like entrepreneurship was just like entrepreneurs were like the new rock stars. And there was this huge one proliferation of stories around like this company got a unicorn, this company became a unicorn. And like, it was just really like interesting to see. And there was this like this glamorization of the industry. And now I think that the landscape has and the narrative has changed a little bit and has brought it down to earth a little bit. Yeah. But it is true that the whole reality or like, you know, Instagram versus reality is just that like there's so much underneath that. It's like an iceberg underneath the surface that just goes on. And so the other question too I have is like, you know, as you're building a company, a lot of the emphasis and the dialogue is around like what you're building. But, you know, when it comes to the people, like how has that experience managing and cultivating teams and leading teams and working with people influenced you as a builder, essentially, like the human people aspect of it?
As an entrepreneur, you get to pick the people that you get to work with, which is the best blessing and what a responsibility. And I think one of the things that's taken me a lot of time and trial and error to learn is, you know, especially on a small team, the people that you select are shaping your culture. And as you scale from 3 people to 10 people to 20 people, you know, those early folks that you bring on, they're defining the culture and then others will follow, both folks that choose to join you and, you know, the behaviors and actions and whatnot. And so I think that responsibility and that blessing are an art and science to get right.
Right.
And one of the things that, you know, I think I'll always be working on, that'll be like a life journey to always, you know, be striving for more and to, you know, grow as a leader to create even, you know, more high performing teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Zooming out to, you know, a bit more of like a macro perspective on Canada and where we're at as a country and where we're at as an innovation ecosystem. You know, we've got world-class talent, capital, research. Why does it feel like we're underperforming when we have everything, like seemingly all the ingredients that you need to make a great recipe?
Say more about underperforming. Share more about like the area that you're double clicking on for what you're zeroing into.
You know, there are 100,000 fewer entrepreneurs in Canada than there were 20 years ago. So what do you think has been driving that decline when we seemingly have a lot of these supports that are there to support our entrepreneurs and to build out an ecosystem and really just kind of optimize the full potential there?
Yeah, I mean, living in Canada is expensive. Mm-hmm. Our cost of living's gone up, you know, with AI coming here, you know, fear of job, you know, being lost is a huge thing. And so I think the shift from abundance or the mindset of I can build, you know, maybe I've fully paid off my home or I'm close to paying off my home. I've got a dual income. So I've got, you know, that shared responsibility, you know, circa 20, 30 years ago to, it's a lot harder to, you know, the cost of living has gone up so much. And so I think the way to support entrepreneurs and the economics around that and doing things so that it's more accessible, you know, so that folks don't have to eat ramen from day zero is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that I'm really encouraged by is entrepreneurship through acquisition. There's some amazing groups like Search Funds, some amazing groups that have put really good muscle and energy into that. And I do think Canada is a burgeoning country from that. When you have the boomers that are, you know, retiring and passing down their companies to the next generation of leaders, there's a huge amount of activity and opportunity there, and that kind of economic structure is such where it allows for more folks to take, you know, step up to the bat to play. So my short answer is the economics of cost of living and what things were like, you know, 20 years ago to now. The one other thing I'll share, one of the things that makes Canada such a special place from a talent standpoint is we've had a huge wave of immigration coming to Canada, and there's a really cool cultural hustle and, you know, the idea that your parents gave up a lot for you to have some opportunity and for you to do something really remarkable. Mm-hmm. An anecdote from my past life, I was running a cohort of entrepreneurs, and there was a first-generation immigrant, and she didn't tell her family that she was doing it. She didn't tell her family that she had quit her job to build. And it just, it stuck with me, because this idea of leaving a job of being a doctor, lawyer, engineer, it's like, that is the thing that you do.
The path.
Yeah. That is the path. Yeah. And so that, you know, she was so nervous that she's like, I can't tell them until I'm successful. Like, right. I need to have done the thing, raise money, and like be on the other side of it in order to share it. And so I think on one hand, we've got this awesome infusion from a culture standpoint, from an immigration, on the immigration front. And there's this risk aversion that is, you know, part and parcel, that is something that I think a lot of aspiring founders are really fighting.
Right. And like, to your point around, you know, immigration, you know, such a beautiful opportunity to create such a diversified group of people that can solve so many unique problems. But do you find that that we're retaining that immigrant talent as well? Like, or are they, you know, using Canada, is Canada a foundation and a platform that people can, you know, build off of and then seize other opportunities that are outside of our borders as well?
I think there's a lot of positive things moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So a couple examples, Mila, the AI Institute out of Montreal, or Amy, the AI Institute out of Alberta, or Vector Institute out of Toronto, a lot of them are putting in place, Mila just announced a $100 million fund, they're putting in place structures to help top technical talent commercialize the innovation that they've been researching through their PhDs or masters in order to actually build businesses. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a massive step in the right direction and something I'm incredibly excited to see. There's more to do, but if I think of capital and connectivity and, you know, from a network standpoint, there's good, positive things that are happening.
What about our appetite for risk? How does that, you know, culturally as a country play into the overall equation around entrepreneurship and innovation and, you know, realizing success here?
What's the old adage? Show me the incentives and I'll show you the outcome.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have so much capital in Canada tied up in real estate or pulling things out of the ground or financing, pulling the activity of pulling things out of the ground. And again, going back to global examples of great innovation economies, there's all kinds of things you can do to incentivize investors to reinvest capital into the market, whether it's tax breaks, whether it's, you know, matching of funds to early stage investments. And so I think there's a lot of positive incentives that other countries have employed that we could do to, you know, give ourselves a bigger boost, because I do think, you know, risk tolerant Canadians, lower risk Canadians, it's partly because of those incentives, and we end up having so much tied up in the real estates and the minings of the world.
Yeah. And so, you know, in your experience working with, you know, founders and different startups, do you see kind of like a through line of when, you know, along a founder's journey and path where there might be that turning point where they are considering exploring other opportunities because Canada has not created the right kind of support systems here? And also, as a result of that, like, what are you doing with your own work that is trying to really not only retain talent but also like attract talent here too?
Yeah. So I'm a former Canadian headquartered founder. Mm-hmm. So I chose to build a company in Toronto, headquartered in Toronto, and we had global talent around the world working on our business. We had freelancers in over 150 cities around the world. So we had pretty global reach. You know, we believed that Toronto was one of the best cities to be building what we were building. You know, we were B2B and a marketplace. And the idea that you could access most multinationals within a 1-hour radius of the Toronto core, it's pretty special. Whereas, you know, if I pick on Europe or if I pick on US, you have to hop on a plane to get to anyone, to get your meetings done. And so that's pretty special. If you can, you know, within the same day meet with X number of multinationals, get going, and then export that innovation globally to other markets. Like, there's something pretty interesting about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's more to be done. I think the inflection point to your, you know, the first part of your question of when folks are leaving, I think there's no reason you can't service customers in the US or in Europe from Canada, and there's no reason that you can't attract capital from either of those markets. And so I think the responsibility is on the founder to basically say, you know, when someone says, hey, can you incorporate in Delaware?
Yeah.
To say, like, actually, I can't. And there's tax reasons why it might actually be better for me to stay and incorporate in Canada. And I think if you've got a great company with great traction and multiple term sheets, the power dynamic will be there. And customers don't really care if you're invoicing. As long as you're sending an invoice, I don't think they care where your mailing address is.
Right. What's on the paper there?
What's on the paper? Like, are you doing a good job and, just, you know, giving me what I need? I think that's sufficient.
Sure. Yeah. So with Simple Ventures, what would you say is, you know, when you created it with your team, what was it providing? What is it providing to our economy and our ecosystem of entrepreneurs that was really fundamentally missing? If you can reiterate and kind of build on that.
Yeah. So we saw a big gap in the Canadian market. One, there wasn't enough, you know, folks stepping up to the plate to build businesses. Mm-hmm. And then two, how you build in Canada is a little bit different than in other markets, just structurally. Prevent the number of provinces, the regulatory barriers, and so on. Yeah. And so we designed Simple Ventures really with those two pieces in mind. So, you know, what do we do and how is it different? We co-create companies with founders, and we do everything we can to stack the odds in their favor. Everything from doing a bunch of validation work to, you know, aggressively trying to help with BD and drive sales. You know, first time founders say idea is most important. Second time founders say, what's my distribution advantage? So we do everything we can to really help with that. And then finally, capital. So when a CEO joins us, we've, you know, underwritten the business and we're ready to, you know, co-create and fund the business with capital. So customers, validation work, capital, and all that together, you know, again, is stacking the odds in the favor of the founder.
So do you consider almost like matchmaking between like a startup and a business with like a CEO and really aligning the stars between the two to kind of create this perfect partnership?
Founder market fit is so important. Yeah. So we need someone that's obsessed with the problem so that when the going gets tough, what's the old adage? Starting a business is like eating glass. When you're eating glass and you're like, oh, this is terrible. I'm in the throes of it. You're like, I really care. Yeah. And I'm going to get through the hard times because this work really matters. And yeah. So we look for folks that are deeply mission aligned with the problem space and the opportunity that we're excited about.
Yeah, yeah. And so what are the types of companies that you're really focusing on? Because there's a million problems that we can try to solve as entrepreneurs, but what's your focus in terms of the companies that you're trying to build and then ultimately the leaders that you're trying to kind of attach to them as well?
Yeah, I'll share a couple examples. We're somewhat industry agnostic, but we look for really good business models that are capital efficient and that we see that the Symbol Ventures community can, you know, provide an unfair advantage. So one example I'll share is AlmaCare. Mm-hmm. It's a postnatal marketplace helping families in that fourth trimester. So after giving birth, Alma's focused on taking care of mom so she can be her best self for baby. So, you know, we provide doulas, lactation consultants, sleep consultants, night nurses, RMTs that specialize in postnatal, meals, broths, the whole shebang, so that we're the one-stop shop taking the mental load off of the parents, mm-hmm. new parents or second or third time parents, so that they can focus on, you know, taking care of their family. So Alma has created over 150 jobs, scaled across Ontario, now scaling across the country. That's one example. Mm-hmm. And then the second example I brought, we have a company called Zero Collective, and it's a luxury handbag rental company.
Okay.
So you pay a membership, and you get a different bag every month. This is my new bag I picked up today. It's a Chanel. But what's so cool about it is, you know, some people get their nails done or spend $7 on a latte, and this is a dopamine hit that you get that, you know, builds your confidence and makes you look great as you're doing it. So that's another example. And then there's many more that we spoke about Harvest, and we have one in the senior care space. So that's the range, but we're geographic focused. So focused on Canada first.
Yep.
And our build.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a big part of the model is pairing the leaders with the companies. What are the traits and the aspects that you look for in the right leader, and how do you know that that's the right person to pair with X company?
Yeah. So I'd say regardless of the domain, we look for someone that has a relentless drive to win and a track record of that. So if you look backwards in their career and personal life, like they break through walls, they make stuff happen, and they're magnetic. People are attracted to them and they built their village accordingly. So that's one key trait. You know, I think another is this idea of urgency. You know, today isn't fast enough. You know, and it's this idea of we need to get it done. Like, how are we building? And to create value or manufacture innovation, you really need to have that urgency and ambition to, you know, break through those walls and do it quickly and move mountains. So those are two examples of, you know, a long list of traits that we assess as we get to know potential founders.
It's interesting. And you mentioned also just like the kind of hunger to win, even on like the personal side. So what would be like an example of something that from like someone's personal life that would kind of be a barometer of that?
Yeah, I think two examples. One would be an obsession with something. My old co-founder, super quirky, pre-Simple Ventures, obsessed with magic. And, you know, when he started doing magic, he went super, super deep and was the best at it.
Sure.
And then became obsessed with, you know, as a kid, if you go back, he was obsessed with mazes and would draw like crazy, crazy things like this. That's one expression of that drive to win, if you will, and that like immersing yourself in something. So that's one example. I think another, it's maybe more of a stereotypical example, but it would be in like athletics. Someone mm-hmm. that just plays at a really high level. They, you know, work hard. They're team oriented. Some of the best founders I've worked with were high performance athletes in their past life. And a lot of those behaviors that are drilled into you in that environment translates super, super well to building high performing business teams.
Yeah, those things that you learn on the court, like discipline or working with the team or sacrifice.
Correct. Direct communication.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, I read in preparing for this, so you've created over 100 jobs in 18 months. Amazing. How do you think about success in terms of, you know, what are the metrics that matter to you the most? Job creation being one of them, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, I think when we built Simple Ventures and launched it, the idea was how do we create a win-win-win? A win for our investors, a win for our founders and their teams, and then for the ecosystem. And so for our investors, you know, if I fast forward 5 years and we look back at high-fiving that this is a wild success, you know, I think one is obviously driven great returns. Mm-hmm. And our investors are thrilled that, you know, our companies have created tons of value and solved a lot of problems for Canadians, both products and services. I think hopefully our founders will have had really great windfalls. They'll have had some great financial outcomes and can feel incredibly proud of the legacy they've built and the impact they've had with their teams. And then for the ecosystem, to your point, it would be that job creation, right? It's, you know, trying to kickstart a lot of things that, to your point, we've had some bad stats moving in the wrong direction and kickstarting some really good ones. And we're at 150 plus jobs now.
Okay.
Since you read about that. It's
updating in real
counting?
Time.
Who's counting?
What has been, you know, something that has been perhaps harder than expected in trying to build the system that you're creating through Simple Ventures?
I mean, I often joke, building a business is hard,
yeah.
As we've talked about. We're doing that squared. So you have to be crazy to do it once, and then to do it to the power of it's a funny choice. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're, I'll pick a silly example. If you're a founder, maybe you need to register with the CRA, right? But you just need to do that once. It'll be a headache, but you'll do it once. We need to do each of those painful, annoying things across every function over and over and over and over again. And so building the system from finance to legal to brand to you name it, has been rewarding, but it's been an investment, right? Like we've had to put that kind of energy into building the foundation. But, you know, each time we help, you know, co-create a business, it's getting easier and easier. And I'm really proud of the companies that are in market and the work we've done to do it. But maybe I'll share this. We're averaging about 2 companies per year. I think to get to 4 companies or 5 companies a year, we need to get our machine to be, you know, there's more work to do to kind of increase that velocity.
Does it get easier the more companies and the more often you're doing these kinds of, you know, you're having these conversations and you're building more companies? Does it feel like it's getting easier as you do more?
Yeah, I think it is. And if you look at venture builders around the world, I think there's a sweet spot. I think you don't want to be in a place where you're pumping out quantity, because that comes with a whole host of other problems.
Yeah.
We're very, very disciplined that we only want to work with killer founders, and we only want to launch companies that were super high conviction in the business model and the go-to-market and the distribution advantage. So I'd rather stay at this velocity rather than like dilute the quality bar.
Yeah.
But that I think it gets easier. And I think for folks that choose to go to quantity, it gets a lot harder in other ways, but we don't have aspirations to be, you know, creating 40 companies a year.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. You know, going back to the Canada conversation, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the world right now. Yeah. There's major global shifts. You got AI, geopolitical tensions, economic uncertainty. Like, it's like a laundry list of things. Do you think these things right now are making it easier or harder to build in Canada? Or alternatively, I guess, does it make building in Canada more attractive in some ways or unattractive in other ways? Like what are you seeing from your end?
I think there's a really special moment that we're in right now where Canadians are rallying to support other Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
and rallying to say, hey, student at, hey, international student at XYZ University, we want to help. Like, stay here and build with us. And so I think if I circle back to when we were starting Simple Ventures, this was not the conversation. It was, yeah. People were literally saying to me, like, why are you staying in Toronto, Rachel? Like, why aren't you going down to the States? Like, that's the obvious answer. And right. I was like, no, that, I think we're getting the narrative wrong here, right? And not just because of the social impact, but because of the economic opportunity. I really believe that there hasn't been enough energy focused on building here, that there's a ton of white space to do so.
Mm-hmm.
There's the talent. That's the opportunity. There's the talent to do so. And then I think this narrative and the support that the ecosystem is rallying around with the Let's Build in Canada is really special and a huge opportunity for builders.
Yeah,
I'll share one example. We're co-hosting Build Canada an awards night. So, you know, I would often get asked to talk about like the doom and gloom stuff that's in the headlines. I'm like, you know what? Let's stop talking about that. And we're going to host an awards night and celebrate all the very best builders from across the country. So we're actually hosting that in 2 weeks.
Oh, incredible.
And we're celebrating. We had over 400 submissions nominating exceptional builders. I wasn't one of the judges. I recused myself, but the judges had a really hard time picking because the caliber and the opportunity and this humility. Like when you look at the growth rates on some of these companies and no one's talking about it, you're like, holy crap, someone needs to do something to put the spotlight here. So that's an example of something where I think the community's rallying and we're trying to help do that and to put the spotlight in a positive way.
You know, the humility thing is interesting because I think that is such a character trait of just Brand Canada.
Yeah.
And it's so great in so many ways. But do you think that Canadians could be better? How am I trying to say this? Do you think Canadians could benefit from being a little bit more rah-rah about ourselves
and
kind of talking about our wins as well?
Hell yeah. I think we need to celebrate wins. I think we need to celebrate failures.
Yeah. Yeah. And talk about them. Yeah.
And that's how we support each other and that's how we grow. And I think that's what's so special about Silicon Valley. People pay it forward, they celebrate the wins and they celebrate the failures. And when you fail, you dust off your knees and you get back up.
Right.
And I think that we are starting to do that, but we've got a long way to go.
Yeah. So on that note, what excites you the most about the next 5-10 years for Simple, but also for just the innovation ecosystem here and just the potential that can be realized?
On the Simple Ventures front, we're just getting started. Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of the early work that we've done and the founders that we're so fortunate to be partnering with around the table. So we've launched and funded 4 companies. Our goal is to launch and fund, with all great success, 25 by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone is hard. So we need to do that in a very thoughtful and, exciting and turbocharged way to what we're doing now. So that's on the Simple Ventures front. And I think if we can look back and see that that's the impact we've made, you know, I feel really proud that we've played our small part in, you know, creating, you know, some impact on the economy. So I think that's on the Simple Ventures front. When I think more macro looking ahead, I think that we're putting this focus on, hey, how is Canada going to compete? Where do we have a right to win? Mm-hmm. And I think just talking about that is the right first step. We weren't having that conversation a couple of years ago.
Mm.
We were maybe more focused on social issues or various things like this. And I think we've now brought it back to productivity focus, goals. And I think, you know, bringing it back to entrepreneurship through acquisition, this massive tsunami, the silver tsunami, I think it's called, mm-hmm. this wave of retirees that are, you know, going to be retiring and looking for buyers for their businesses. I think we have a huge opportunity as Canadians to make sure that's a successful transition.
Yeah.
And that the wealth stays in Canada as we do that. And so I think that's both the simple path forward as well as maybe where I'm excited on the macro for Canada.
Amazing. Well, I feel like that's such a great note to end our interview on. And I just had such a great time just learning about your work and the ecosystem that you're really cultivating and just championing Canadian. I think it's just not, you know, this is the thing that we always talk about too, is that like championing Canadian, not because it's Canadian, but because it's some of the best in the world and can stand up against some of the best in the world. And it just happens to be Canadian. I think that that's so important to make to distinguish that, because we're not championing success and winning narratives because we feel obligated to, because it's Canadian. It's because they are truly amongst the best. And we have the best talent across, you know, tech, business, culture. Like, we have everything we need here, and we just need to, you know, continue to build.
Amen. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.